Can you hear me okay? Okay, good. I'm not as electronically trained as James with all those devices he was pulling out that didn't belong to him. James, I was doing the math. It's been about 16 years. I think 1996 is when we first encountered each other. And so I've watched a lot of changes. His kiddos have changed tremendously during that time. He and I both have changed ministry roles a lot during that time. Even my prayers have changed. Used to it was, you know, let the words of my mouth and the meditations of my heart. Now it's let the words of my mouth and the medications of my heart be acceptable in your sight. You know, things have gone through a lot of changes in my life, anyway. I listened to an engineer a little bit ago telling us about the thermodynamics, and I think what I got out of that, James, was there's a lot of hot air in this place. Right? So we're on track. Right. It is a special blessing to be here. James mentioned that by having me preach this morning, we might boost attendance Saturday. He didn't talk about the downside. By having me preach this morning, nobody will show up Saturday. So I'm going to ask you to be a little fair and just maybe a little bit forgiving. Sometimes I may crank the tractor and the next time it may not work, but give me another shot. I'd love to see you Saturday. I'd love to have you join with us, and we'll have a good time on Saturday evening. Ministers are like everybody else. Sometimes we hit it and sometimes we don't. The difference between ministers and you most times is when I go to a ball game and I start getting a little bent out of shape and start yelling at the referees, you remind me of my role as a minister, right? When you do it, you're just being helpful. You see, that's about the only difference. It kind of comes with the job. Some of you have asked about Willen and I. What are we doing nowadays? I met a lot of folks this morning that I haven't seen in a little while. Belinda, my wife, everybody, wave to everybody, Belinda. I think they may have met you by now. Okay. She and I changed roles about a year ago. I was on staff at Hayes Hills Baptist Church as Minister of Education and Administration, and I stepped out of that about a year ago. Now, I consulted for about 6 months, 2 days a week with business administration and some other things trying to help make the transition. And since then, I've done a lot of new things in my life. My wife is in charge of volunteers at Central Texas Medical Center up in San Marcos. She's in charge of all the volunteers, including me now. You see, I'm one of the conscripted volunteers. I'm one of the newer ones. If she needs something done, she calls on me first. And I really appreciate that. I'm enjoying that role. I'm also a volunteer chaplain up there and getting involved in some of that as well. And I put together a team from Central Texas Medical Center where we build handicap ramps and access ramps for people in hospice and handicapped folks that don't have other resources. They may not have the financial resources or the people to do that. Matter of fact, we built one yesterday. That's why my voice is a little husky today. We were out in the wind yesterday. And we're going to these places, and people have been carrying each other up and down steps, and now we have a handicap ramp. So their life changes a little bit. Matter of fact, the lady we built one yesterday couldn't come home from the hospital until we built the ramp. That was one of the requirements. So now she's home. So it's a privilege to be involved in all of that. Belinda and I also have a bed and breakfast at our place. You make both. We do have one, and we've had it open for a number of years. And when we have time to operate that, we have a number of guests, and we enjoy that. That's a fun interface. If you've ever been in that kind of environment to sit and share with people, it seems like we start breakfast in the morning sometimes, and along about 11:30 or 12, we're finally all getting up from the table to go do something. You know, it's just really a different kind of environment. And so I'm not really retired. I've just been retreaded, I think is the way you say that. And many of the changing roles are there. Changing roles in our lives sometimes causes a lot of tension. And in my life, it's no different. For those of you who may have retired, you understand that. Rethinking who you are. And so you sometimes have to just retool or redefine is what that's all about. You just make changes. And changes cause a lot of tension. And speaking of that change, I got an email from a guy who he had made a phone call to a friend. And he got a message on the friend's answering machine and said something along the line like this. He said, I'm reorganizing my life. I'm removing much of the clutter and trying to focus on just those things that are important. If I don't call you back, you're one of those changes. And so I guess that happens sometimes in our life. It's my hope and my prayer today that because of what we say here, maybe there's some changes that will happen in your life as well. Maybe some thoughts. And you say, you know, from this point on, it's going to be a little different. This is the way we're going to look at it. Today I want to just kind of talk to you One of the things that I've observed over the years in speakers is they have some of this fireside chat manner. They just want to talk. I'm not really a preacher by calling. I'm more education and administration kind of thing. But I do like to talk about things that are important every now and then. And that's kind of where I want to go today. If you've got your scripture, you can look in Galatians chapter 6. That's where we're going to be turning today, where we're going to be looking. And we'll share from the first 10 verses there, we'll be sharing some information. This is one of Paul's really important letters. It's his grace letter. If you've ever studied that whole letter that he wrote in Galatians, he starts off identifying who he is, and he has the right to speak. He has the right to represent Christ because of his call and because of his own conversion experience. And he speaks of the message of his acceptance by the disciples and by Christ himself. And then he moves on to an explanation of the conflict that's arisen between the church and a group of people called the Judaizers. They want to go back to the old ways. They want to set rules to live by. That was the tradition. Most of us do best with some kind of structure in our life. And I think it's kind of a natural tendency to move into that direction, don't you? Even in our churches, we have certain things that we do. You sit a certain place, you do a certain thing, you show up at a certain time, you go this door, that. I mean, there's certain things that become part of our recommendation of the way we do life in order to do life as a Christian or as a member of a church at a particular place. And Paul addresses some of that. And he says, you know, you're here just by God's grace, guys. You're going to mess up. You're going to foul up. But that doesn't matter because it's not about what all you do and how you do it. It's about God's grace. And there are scriptures that talk about it. And while I was yet sinners, Christ died for us. Not in our goodness, but in those kind of relationships. And so he talks about the freedom that's found there. And then he goes to chapter 6 and he says, let me give you a few rules for living as a church. Let me give you some guidelines. And that's what we see in the verses in chapter 6 and some of the first verses there. Many years ago, when I was a young man, the sun was about that big and the moon hadn't even been born yet, I guess. It was a long time ago. Dinosaurs probably walked the earth. But I saw an ad in a magazine. Now, you guys know what a magazine is. If you take your cell phone and flip down several pages, if you were to copy those and staple them together, that's a magazine. And there were magazines, Time, Newsweek, U.S. News, things like that. I was flipping through a magazine, and I found a whole page ad that AT&T had produced. And it had a bunch of little bubbles. Some of them were dime size, and some of them were that big, and some of them were all different sizes. And inside these bubbles were little people, kind of in a little fetal position. And there were just people all over this page in these little bubbles. And right in the middle of the page, it said, reach out and touch someone. What they were trying to visually convey to us is that we have this way of isolating ourselves in our world, and we get into our little thing, doing our little bit, and we never reach across that little bubble. We never get out of that shell. And they were encouraging us to reach out and touch somebody, to get beyond your bubble. Now, they wanted to do that because they stood to benefit from that, obviously. That telephone call was going to cost you, and they liked that. There wasn't unlimited sale charges and those kind of things. And so they were wanting you to reach out and touch someone. But that was the whole idea, to get beyond that, to reach out, to touch somebody. The scripture that we look at today is a little bit about that same thing, about as a believer, as a Christian, it is our role and our task, our being, to reach out and touch somebody. To get beyond ourselves and to help each other as well. Let's look in chapter 6 of Galatians and let's start reading some of those verses. This is the Holman Christian Bible that I'm reading from. It says, brothers, if someone is caught in any wrongdoing, you who are spiritual should restore such a person with a gentle spirit, watching out for yourselves so that you won't be tempted also. Carry one another's burdens. In this way you will fulfill the law of Christ. For if anyone considers himself to be something when he is nothing, he is deceiving himself. But each person should examine his own work, and then he will have a reason for boasting in himself alone, and not in respect to someone else. For each person will have to carry his own load. Unique thought, isn't it? The one who has taught the message must share his goods with the teachers. I like that one too. Don't be deceived. God is not mocked. For whatever a man sows, he will also reap. Because the one who sows to the flesh will reap corruption from the flesh, but the one who sows to the Spirit will reap eternal life from the Spirit. So you must not get tired of doing good. For we will reap at the proper time if we don't give up. Therefore, as we have opportunity, we must work for the good of all, especially for those who belong to the household of faith. Another age-telling story, Tennessee Ernie Ford was a country and a gospel singer. Any of you guys remember Tennessee Ernie Ford? There's about three of you. That's good. I was too young to remember that stuff. But actually, we used to listen to that show every Thursday night. And I knew it was Thursday because Saturday was Gunsmoke and Lawrence Welk and homemade hamburgers. And then Thursday was what was this one. We got to listen to Tennessee Ernie Ford. And it was kind of a comedy review. He had a lot of funny things going on, some country songs and some Western songs. But at the end of every show, this guy would stand up there and he would sing a gospel hymn. And it was always really some cool stuff he did. I mean, he had a great voice and he just sang this wonderful thing at the end of each song. But one of my favorites that came out of his was a song that was written by C.D. Meigs. It was a song that was called Others. He often sang that at the end of his show. And it went kind of like this. It said, Lord, help me live from day to day in such a self-forgetful way that even when I kneel to pray, my prayer might be for others. Others, Lord, yes, others. Let this my motto be. Help me to live for others that I may live like thee. Have you ever looked at a calendar for your church to see what's going on? I was looking at your bulletin just a little bit ago, your worship guide. All the little boxes, and you see all of the things that are going on in our churches. Most of our churches are networked into just about everything in our community. We're very, very, very involved. We're involved with each other. We're involved with those outside our walls. Our members are on school boards and parenting groups and neighborhood community boards and all kinds of things. They're working in their schools and raising their children and are involved in all the sports leagues and the whole thing. Our pastors are in nursing homes and hospitals and jails. I mean, they're everywhere all the time. And it's just kind of a nature of who we are, our deacons and our ministers. We're very involved in the world around us. Why? Well, the answer is found in the verses that we see here, I think. Particularly in verse 2, for example. Carry one another's burdens, and this way you'll fulfill the law of Christ. Paul is writing to a newly formed church in Galatia. They're just trying to figure out some things. They're struggling with some of the rules of behavior, and they're just trying to work their way through. But these people are just like we are today. In their group, there were the chiefs and there were the Indians. There were both groups in their congregations. And Paul was admonishing his members to look at their part in the work of ministry and see what you're doing. Pay attention to what's going on and then use some good common sense and some guidelines in the way that you do that. There are about three admonitions. I could call them warnings. I could call them commands. Whatever. I think admonitions is a good word. But there are about three admonitions that we see in these verses that I really want to bring to your attention today. The first one is mentioned several times in these verses. It starts out right at the first. In verse 1, he tells us, watch out lest you be tempted. Right? Watch out lest you be tempted. Verses 3 through 8, warning about pride that can come from doing good. An awkward concept, isn't it? But there is a pride in that. In doing good, we've got to be careful not to perceive our good as superseding the good that anybody else does. Now, I've seen this in churches. I don't know your church that well. I know James and his family, and I know some of you, the members here, but I don't know your church as a body very well, so I don't know all the dynamics here. But I've been in churches where I've watched the competition between ministries. You know, they're fighting for the budget, they're fighting for the people, they're fighting for the time, you know, the whole thing, there's this competition. And there's a danger in all of that we've got to be careful that we don't perceive our good as being more important than anybody else's good. Right? The ministry that I love, the one that I participate in, the one that I'm part of, must be the most important thing in the church. Because I love Jesus. And if I love Jesus and I do this, I don't understand why all the rest of the people don't do this. And I see that sometimes. Folks say, well, I sing in the choir. And they say, well, okay, good. I need you to come to Sunday school too. No, I can't. I sing in the choir. But the choir is during the worship time. I know, but I sing in the choir. You see, so we don't have this understanding sometimes about this shared ministry that all of us have a part in the work in life. And sometimes we have to cross into all of those different areas. And even if we don't, that's okay. It's okay that you do that, that you sing in the choir, that you lead the music, or that you have a particular thing. That's wonderful. And we should encourage each other in that and applaud each other for the good work they do in that and lift each other up in the good work that we do there. It's kind of like in our marriages. Sometimes when we get married, we're kind of different people. My wife and I are very different. You may hear some of that Saturday night. I'm not sure how much we want to get into that. I mean, this is a love festival, not a counseling session. So we're very different. And I'm kind of glad, because if both of us were alike, one of us wouldn't be necessary, right? And so we kind of add to each other, and that's the way the church is. We have to be careful that our ministry doesn't overshadow everybody else's ministry. That's the first warning that he gave me. I'm reminded also in verse 5, he talks about how to help. For each person will have to carry his own load. Now, Belinda and I were band parents for about 97,000 years. I forget how many. Our kids were in band forever. And we loved that. But, you know, they went to the ball games and then they do the road trips. And when they do the out-of-town trips, they get back at 1 o'clock. And then they've got to unload the band trucks and do all their stuff. And then they get to go home. Well, Mom and Dad, even if we didn't go on the road trip, we're waiting there. And we're waiting. So I went up to pick my kids one night. I forget if it was Rob or Denise, which one was. They were 3 years apart, so one was in band one time. They graduated, the other one started. But anyway, we were there. I pulled up behind a bus that carried all the instruments on it. And I stopped, and I'm sitting there. It's 1 o'clock at night or something. And all these kids come bailing off the buses, and they run over, and they've been told, get your stuff and get it inside. And so this one big old husky kid comes up to the back of the door, bus, opens the door, reaches up, and he starts getting all the stuff and handing it off. And he does this for about 10 minutes. And I notice all the other kids are grabbing stuff and running inside and running back out. And he just keeps handing them stuff. And they just keep doing that. Finally, that just gets boring for him. So he finds an adult sponsor standing over. And he just kind of goes over and starts talking to them. You know, and the kids keep unloading the bus. And I don't know if this was some appointed leader or self-appointed leader. I'm not sure. But he was just... And he keeps looking back. And next thing I know, they're down to about the last bandstand and the last instrument. He runs over and gets in line. Reaches up there and gets it and just walks inside. Like, man, we got that bus done. Isn't that cool? You see? And I thought, that's kind of the way it happens a lot of time in our lives. We're working in groups of people and we've always got the pointers. You know, they'll look at you and say, you know, you're doing a good job, but you're really not doing it right. I can tell you how it would be done to be more effective and better. But now I'm not going to do it. But I can tell you how that goes, you see. And we have that. We have that in every group, in every organization. And we learn it at an early age. I watched this kid do it, and he's just in high school. So he's got this mastered already, how to let everybody do it and then take credit for the whole thing. Paul speaks about that, about carrying your own load. Don't compare yourself with everybody else. Don't compare yourself with everyone else. He says right before that, look at your own work. And then when you have reason for boasting, be boasting in yourself, in you alone. And not in respect to someone else. Then you don't have to say, well, I'm not as pretty as tall as talented as this other person. I'm doing what God wants me to do, and I do it. And I'm having a great time. And I'm doing it well. Second attitude, or second admonition, is an attitude of gratitude. In verse 6, Paul admonishes about, says, the one who has taught the message must share his goods with the teacher. This is not just about teachers and teaching and the message being taught. It's about saying thank you. How many of you have been thanked today for something you did? And doesn't it feel good? It's a warm fuzzy. We need that, right? We just have to have that to work on, to thrive on. And it's not because the thank you makes us do the work. We do the work anyway. But it helps undermine and underscore the fact that we're seen. Somebody noticed we exist. You know, that's the thing that I love about Christ and about being a Christian. God knows you exist. Right or wrong, He knows you're there. We should acknowledge that with other people. There's a lot of thank yous. A lot of different ways that we can say thank you. In one of the churches where I attended a number of years back, where I served on staff, they had a section in their worship thing, the letters that lift. And in that little section, people who would write letters to the church and say, I just want to thank the church for bringing meals to such and such because my father or grandfather passed away. They would print those little things in there. And I love to read that section because I saw, one, what was going on in the church, but two, I love to see these people encouraging one another with all the good stuff they were doing, the hospital visits, the counseling sessions, the bereavement things, the funeral. I love to see all of that encouragement going on and those thank yous being stated. The other night, we built the deck on Saturday, but Thursday, before we built that ramp, excuse me, not the deck, it's ramp, we had a work day at the warehouse where we put these parts together. And I had six or seven people show up that night who had never done any of this before. And they showed up, and I got to be the pointer that night. Go this, do this, go this. You know. But they were putting together all the pieces, loading the trailer, getting everything done to get ready to go out and build that ramp. An interesting thing, of the seven people that showed up that night to build the ramp, none of them were going to build the ramp, because they had schedule conflicts and they couldn't go on Saturday with us to build the ramp. But they showed up Thursday night to help do the preparation for it. The people who built the ramp, none of those people showed up on Thursday night to get ready. So there's one group preps, so the other group builds the ramp. Except for Belinda and I. I think we were the only two. After they finished, I went home that night and I sat down and wrote an email to every one of them. And I said, I just want to thank you for being part of the team and for your participation, what happened. Because we had a great time. We enjoyed each other. We had a great time. And I saw some of them then later on Friday. That was Thursday night we did that. I sent it to them. Then some of them had already read it. I saw them Friday. You'd act like I'd given them, you know, $100. They were just so excited. Somebody noticed I did something and said thank you. Around this church, every week there are hundreds of tasks that take place. And you're doing them. And I don't know if you're acknowledging it to one another or not, but it would be a great idea every now and then at least to do that, you know. A little note, an email, a thank you. Say, hey, I enjoyed Sunday because it was so special. You were my teacher in Bible class, and you were there on time, and you had a good lesson for me. I just appreciate the fact that you care for me and you're there every week. Now, you do that too often, they'll make you that teacher, by the way, but sometimes you just need to take a moment to say thank you. You appreciate the music that goes on. You say, Caleb, you have the greatest red hair in the whole world, and I love that. You know, just send him an email, a thank you note. You know, something to let people know that you noticed them and you noticed their part in his contribution. Paul says that do your own work, carry your own burdens, but then acknowledge those who serve you. Say thank you to those who give you a little bit of an encouragement, who help you out along the way. Then the third admonition I want to look at is found in verses 7 through 8. And it talks about God and His perception. And God is not mocked. Do not be deceived. God is not mocked. Paul is saying, he says, cool it, guys. God's got this covered. You guys are all bent out of shape, trying to fix everybody's problem. Hey, don't worry about it. I think in today's vernacular, he'd be saying, chillax. You know, take a break, guys. You don't have to defend God's good name. Nobody's going to sneak up on Him. Nobody's going to get the best of Him and circumvent all the stuff and get on top of God's place. The Father is not to be deceived by all that. We don't have to worry about that. Look at the nature of the punishment, though, for a moment. I think that's what's outstanding. Because if you sow to his flesh, you will reap corruption from the flesh. But the one who sows to the Spirit will reap eternal life from the Spirit. My kids, when they were younger, I was being that model parent, that ideal parent. I'd heard it somewhere, you know, if you got a situation, deal with it and ask the kids what they ought to be. Get them involved in the punishment process. And you know, like the model parents, you'd call them and say, okay, what do you think I ought to do about this? Now, don't you think that's a dumb question? Right? I mean, your kids already messed up, and they know they messed up, and they got caught, and you said, well, what do you think I ought to do about this? Well, they're going to volunteer. I think you need to ground me until I'm 35. You know, I think you need to pull my car away from me. I think you need to lock me under the house. I don't, you know, they're not going to volunteer something like that, right? And so my kids were kind of brain dead. I'd call them and say, well, what do you think I ought to do about that? And then they'd look at the floor. Or they'd look at the sky. Yeah. And the lights were on, but there was nobody home. You know, they weren't going to respond. Because they knew things were wrong, but they weren't necessarily volunteering the kind of punishment God has said it a different way. He said, you know, you messed up. I'm going to let you just reap what you sow. I'm going to let these things live themselves out. Boy, that can be the harshest punishment of all kinds. That's when we need grace, and that's when we need mercy, and that's when we need help. Not when things are going great, but when we mess up. Because if they live themselves out, relationships get destroyed, families get destroyed, financial worlds get turned upside down. I mean, the sin in our life, it absolutely corrodes, corrupts, and destroys. And if God says, hey, just reap what you sow. Wow. That's a terrible punishment, isn't it? That's harsh. It's fair, but it is harsh. And I'm so grateful that God is a forgiving person, that He's willing to say, you know, I'm not going to let you suffer this alone. I'm going to work some things out for you. And often He does it in our life. Often He does. And finally, there's the admonition in verses 9 and 10. Verses 9 and 10. So we must not get tired of doing good, for we'll reap at the proper time. If we don't give up, therefore, we have opportunity. We must work for the good of all, especially to those who belong to the household of faith. Taking care of others and ministering with them is very hard. I'm not going to play that down as easy. One of the things when I stepped down from my post at Hayes Hills, I was explaining to the congregation, I'd reached a time in my life when I was physically still able to do a lot of stuff. And my mother, who's 85, was in need of some help and support. My wife, who's handling hundreds of volunteers at the hospital, could use some support and some help. My daughter's in San Antonio. I get the chance to go and help with her some. And I, too, have two grandchildren. And Lord knows, there's never enough time to take care of all the grandchildren's needs. I mean, even if they don't know they need it, they need us, right? And so there's all these opportunities ahead of us. I'm sorry I said that. Man, that's a lot of obligations I let myself in for, and I kind of wanted to go home and fish and watch TV and hang out, right? But when you get involved in that, when you get involved in helping people, sometimes it gets really tiring, doesn't it? It wears you out. You reach the end of your rope, and you have to tie a knot and just hang on. And say, man, let's see, next week is going to be different than this week, right? You get there, don't you? Yeah, it's really hard. Winston Churchill, who was that great prime minister in England in World War II, was called on one time to give a commencement address at the university, and he stepped up to the podium, and he got quiet, and he said this. He said, never, 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 never give up. And then he turned and sat down, and that was the whole address. I was a pearl diver at a restaurant when I was in high school. And you guys know what a pearl diver is? I wash dishes. I would get up at 4:30, and I'd show up at 5 o'clock. And I grated, I don't know how many bags of potatoes. They'd boil potatoes all night, and I had to grate those all up into those hash browns that you get, right? And those big, long rolls of cheese. And I'm just grinding that stuff up. I'm doing all that, all the prep for the day's work. It was a Mexican food restaurant, but they had a big breakfast run, and then they had a big lunch run. So I'm doing all that prep. But also, when things are quiet and I'm not doing all of that, then I'm washing dishes. Now, they had a little lady that worked there as the real dishwasher. Mine was kind of, I jumped in there and filled in every now and then, helped out. And I would bust tables, too. But she was the real dishwasher. She was about this tall, a little colored lady. I think she probably was in her 40s, but she looked like she's in her 80s. And I understood why. At that time, we didn't have the automatic things where we stacked all the dishes in the tray and shoved it through and it came out the other end, you know, with a Good Housing seal of approval on it or something. I mean, you took them in there and you scraped all the stuff off and you dumped them in this one and you washed them. And then you set them in this one and you got them all rinsed and cleaned up. Then you set them in that one and washed them off again and finally you dried them or set them in a drying rack. We did have a dryer. But she stood there all day long in front of these three sinks full of very hot water. And she would do this and do this and do this. And she did that all day long. She started about 4 in the morning, and she finished a little after lunch, 1 o'clock. And that was her job. And I felt so sorry for that lady. I was just a high schooler, big old strapping kid, but I thought, man, I couldn't do that. Because when I had to go stand in there and do it for a while, I was ready to do anything. You know, give me onions to peel. I don't care. Just give me something. Let me out of this. But she did it all day long. And you know why? Because she had three kids, I think. And they were all just getting up to that age where they're in high school. And she was supporting them. And so every day, all day, she did that to take care of her kids. Sometimes helping out, sometimes doing good is not easy. But it's got to be done. And so we never, 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 never give up. We just keep on doing what we're called to do. Jesus himself went through some difficult times. And just before going to the cross, he brought this same thing to the Father, didn't he? In Matthew 26, verse 39, he requests, "If it be possible, let this cup pass from me. Nevertheless, not my will, but thine be done." And so it is in our life. As the church, we live in this world and we represent Jesus Christ every day. We confront people that don't like us. We confront people who do love us. Either one is work. And we get involved in people's lives that are way beyond the walls of our home. And we're out there doing things and using up energy and time and strength and money and resources because they need us. And we need to never, 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 never give up. Because who knows what life you're going to change? Who knows what's going to be different about the process? Because it's not about us, is it? It's for others. That song goes on, "And when my work on earth is done and my new work in heaven's begun, may I forget the crown I've won while thinking still of others." Others, Lord, yes, others. Let this my motto be. Help me to live for others that I may live like Thee. In a few moments, we're going to go from this place. And before we do, I want to say a prayer for us. I want to reflect on the scripture that we've talked about. And I'll call on Jesus to honor our lives and bless our lives. We are the church. Regardless of what the name says out front as far as the particular congregation that meets here, we are the church. And we have that responsibility. I'm going to ask James, after my prayer, if you will, to step up and lead us through any kind of a commitment resource you'd like to, or service time you'd like to. But I want us to pray and pray. Say, "Lord, how am I involved in the lives of others? At what level? And am I doing it properly? Am I envious or jealous? Or am I just out there just giving it as a gift and letting you work through this process? And letting you bless me?" Would you pray with me?